Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Easter on Zoom.
Very good. Yeah, thanks, Peter. Thanks to everybody in service to this meeting. My name's Christian. I'm an alcoholic. I've been through this process with a Big Book Step Study sponsor. His name's Jerry J. out of Pennsylvania. So this is a Pennsylvania meeting. Maybe some of you know him. A loving God. I've worked the steps and I've made my amends and I've done all the criteria that Peter just mentioned. This is my first time speaking at a BBSS meeting. I've only been qualified for about 8 days now. And I spoke at a AAA meeting on Saturday, so I'm starting to cut my teeth out here. So yeah, thanks. I see people clapping. I love it. I'm a West Coast guy, California. I brought a few of my West Coast guys with me here so that make sure I wouldn't lie too much and they could make fun of me later if I get into trouble. I love, you know, everything about this chapter in this book. I'll just, you know, I don't need to tell you too much about my past, except for that, you know, with alcohol, I burned my life to the ground. And I get tempted to want to tell you about what it was like when I drank, but I find that it creates separation between me and you, and that I'm looking to impress you with my drunkalogue. And I also don't talk much about my childhood and the family life because I also find that I find myself trying to sell you on the idea of why I'm an alcoholic. And I've come to realize that the reason that I'm an alcoholic is because I made a decision to put alcohol into my body against the, you know, advice of all the adults and teachers and sort of, you know, role models in my life. And I did it for long enough that I lost the ability to choose whether I was going to drink anymore. And so alcohol, you know, I burned my life to the ground with this thing. I originally got into rehab for alcohol the first time when I was 14. That was back in about 1984. And I hadn't lost the ability to choose yet. I finally got here in 94, crawled across the door to an AA meeting, and I stayed sober for 18 years. I didn't find recovery, but I did get sobriety for that period of time. I got away from the program, which I thought was going to lots of meetings. I thought the fellowship was mostly the program. I read the book maybe once, half-heartedly, didn't understand what it said. And I relapsed after 18 years, and I didn't want to come back and introduce myself as a newcomer. So, you know, I white knuckled it for a while. So I've got 12 years sober of booze, and I relapsed on a prescription medication that I abused for longer than I needed to, and more than I needed to by a lot. And so I have 2 years, 5 months right now of clean and sober. That whole period, though, I've been in recovery for that whole time, not just in the fellowship. And so I love this chapter, and I'll just switch over to now. I look at this chapter and all the way up into We Agnostics as primarily step one for me. And I get into step two around We Agnostics, you know, and step one carries over for me a little bit into that chapter. But I really love this to talk about the beginning of our symbol, the circle and the triangle. And the triangle represents to me, you know, we lost our copyright on that in the mid 90s, but that's an important symbol to me. It reminds me that unity, service, and recovery, you know, unity being the fellowship, and, you know, service being me taking people through the steps, and recovery being where am I in the steps right now? Am I practicing 10, 11, and 12 every day, which I do, by the way. I forgot to mention that. I practice 10, 11, and 12 every day. That circle around the triangle represents the fact that if I have all three of those pieces in place, I can be whole. And that's my relationship with God. And I find that step one for me You know, I had to be brought to a place where I was on a path to doom. And that if that part of me couldn't die, things would just continue to get worse. That if I was still miserable in AA, it was a sign that I hadn't clearly gotten step one yet. And that I needed to build a foundation on the truth. You know, honesty is mentioned three times in the first paragraph of How It Works, you know, which is our, how this thing works. I got step one is also a grace period for me to get a new solution in place, because in step one, when we take away the only solution I had being alcohol, I need to get something new planted there. So I think about it in the three ways that it describes in the book, you know, being the spiritual malady, followed by the mental obsession, followed by the physical craving or the physical allergy. And when I look at it in those terms and in that order, you know, when I'm playing God, which I did most of my life, you know, when I'm playing God, there's that mental obsession that says to me that I could probably have another drink. I could probably take some other form of substance that'll get me out of the way I'm feeling. I could probably try drinking in a different fashion or a different type of, you know, liquor that that would work for me. And that obsession, basically, you know, the term obsession to me means a thought that outweighs all other thoughts. And that thought for me that I could somehow do this again was the thought that outweighed all thoughts in my life all the time. I would consider sometimes that I was going to burn my life to the ground. She was going to leave me. I was going to lose the job. I was going back to jail or whatever was going to happen. But then the thought on top of all those thoughts, that obsessive thought, was that somehow it would be different this time. I also had the mental blank spot that it talks about in the book, where sometimes, somehow, I didn't even have a thought. I realized after I had the first drink in my hand that it had happened, and I didn't know how it had happened. It just got there, which leads me to that physical allergy, you know, that once that's touched my lips, there is no telling what's going to happen next, except for I'm not going to meet any of my obligations and I'm not going to stop drinking, you know, no matter what my plans are, you know, the alcohol has taken over. So I've got that allergy. And, you know, one thing I like to think about my allergy is, and how I look at my allergy is, or the obsession even, is if I think about, and you could all do this exercise, you know, if you think about the 5 or 10 most insane things you've ever done in your life, and you were to write those down, you know, those insane things we did while we were drinking, those regrettable things, you know, those horrible things, those things that resulted in the car crashes and the handcuffs and the people crying and disappointments and jobs lost. If we think about all that stuff and write it down, the craziest thing that we ever did isn't even on the list, because the craziest thing that we ever did was after we did those things, the next best idea we had was to go get another drink. You know, and so that to me really amplifies the insanity of this thing. And it talks about in this chapter how this problem centers in my mind. You know, and the word insanity, it, you know, is a Latin word that just means unhealthy, just means I have an unhealthy mind with regards to my decisions around alcohol. So, you know, I love to think about that because that really ties it all together for me. I think about the craziest stuff I ever did, but really what it was the next day when I crawled out of the gutter or got out of jail or whatever happened, I thought, more booze. That's what I need, you know, and that never occurred to me. I don't think that that was going to be a problem. So I just will, got about 10 minutes left. I'm just going to run through that chapter really quickly and talk about the things that are very meaningful to me. On page 17, it's important to me that I learn that the fellowship alone is not enough for me to stay sober. Well, first of all, actually, there is a solution. That's the title of this chapter. And I love the idea that there is a solution. It's found in this book. And it's found in the 12 steps in my relationship with God. And the fellowship alone is not enough for me to stay sober. These first 1,000 people who have recovered, it talks about recovered in the past tense. You know, they're my heroes. Bill and Bob and the founders, the pioneers of this thing are my heroes. You know, it's plain and simple. And the idea that they've recovered, you know, I believe that I've recovered too. I'm definitely not cured. You know, of course, you all know we've got a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, which I'll talk about in a minute, what my spiritual condition is like. You know, on page 18, there's some good stuff in italics there that talks about, you know, great way to look for a sponsor. This is a great description of untreated alcoholism. You know, in step one, I think the important words to me are, you know, powerless and unmanageable. And I've had the realization of what powerlessness is that all of the evidence I have in my whole life would suggest that I have zero power over alcohol. I have not a shred of evidence to give you guys to tell you that I have power over this thing, you know, in any way. If I'm in court and we're trying to prove my powerlessness over alcohol, and I've got Johnny Cochran and, you know, Dershowitz and all the best attorneys in the world, they couldn't convince a jury that I had power over alcohol. That just doesn't exist. And then the unmanageability part for me is, you know, at first in the 80s and the 90s, it was very clear that my life was unmanageable because just look at me. You know, I was bleeding or I was in jail or whatever was going on. But, you know, when I relapsed and came back at this thing, I had a career, you know, and everything on the outside looked great. In fact, 99% of the population of the world would trade places with me in a heartbeat the way I was living. But on the inside, I wanted to die. I had the inward unmanageability that I think we classify as untreated alcoholism. And so on page 19, you know, I like the part about that we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, right? So this is another place in the book that it talks about that this is a symptom. It's not the real problem. The problem, as I understand it, and the problem I live by right now, is the understanding that the root of my trouble is selfishness and self-centeredness. That's it. That's all I need to know right there. And that alcohol was just a symptom. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupation, and affairs. No better way to see how a person's recovery is doing than to see how their home is doing, right? And it says all of us spend much of our spare time. It doesn't say some of us. It says all of us. A little further down, it talks about in large cities, you know, those close by hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they have the opportunity we've enjoyed. And I think of that now in the modern, you know, 91 years later, what that looks like in my town is that there's a lot of homelessness in my town. And I believe that that's what this looks like now. Those are the people, to me, dropping into oblivion every day. Alcoholism and drug addiction behind 99% of it, at least where I live. And what can I do or what am I doing about that? How am I offering, you know, what was so freely given to me? The bottom of the page, most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoint and respect to their opinions and attitudes make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. That's telling me that my life depends on thinking about others right there. It's really, really simple and straightforward for me. It doesn't mean that, you know, I have to think, you know, less of myself. I just need to think more of others, right? focusing on my own problems rarely helped much, is my idea there. On the next page, on page 21, can I stay stopped on my own like a moderate or hard drinker can? Am I physically a real alcoholic? And the answer for me is clearly yes. Further down on that page, he is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor. Yeah, that's me in a lot of ways. And I love, he often possesses special ability, skills, and aptitude and has a promising career ahead of him. I like to know that I don't have to focus on that I've just got some disease here that makes me different than everyone. I like the idea that I do possess special abilities above and beyond. I actually take it a step further, and I believe that we alkies are God's chosen people. You know, for me, my opinion of this disease is that I am such a person that cannot live outside of the guidance of God and my conscience, that it takes alcohol and things like alcohol to completely numb me out of feeling the way I feel, knowing I'm not living my correct life, you know, by God. And, you know, for the average person, they can just go shopping and get a hit that way. They could just binge watch some Netflix and get a hit that way. Maybe a Twinkie will do it for you. But for me and for people like us, in my experience, we got to go much deeper to calm down the idea of the conscience. Let's see here. So I look in on page 22, you know, I look inside for the problem, not on the outside. And it talks about on 23, that's very important for me to know that the main problem of me centers in my mind rather than my body. And we talked about, you know, an obsession is an idea that outweighs all other ideas. On page 24, you know, I really like the idea that I think about the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, but a desire to stop drinking is not going to keep me sober. That's not the only requirement to keep me sober. Let's see. I have most everything on those two, 24 and 25 highlighted, but I like the appendix 2 references in here, and I don't ever read this chapter without reading appendix 2, mostly because it was helpful for me to realize that, yeah, I didn't have a white light experience like Bill did and some of the new people did, but what I do have is the spiritual awakening that's happening to me in the educational variety described in appendix 2, and slowly over time, with the practice of 10, 11, and 12 especially. And I started practicing 10, 11, and 12 as soon as I got a real AA sponsor. And, you know, in that, you know, in my daily work, the way that I get close to God is I practice the two-way prayer from the Oxford group, the way of praying that Bill and Bob practiced. And I look, you know, I measure my guidance from God against the four absolutes of honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity. And I take that guidance that matches those four things throughout the day, and I try and obey what God's guidance is for me every day. I do an hour of prayer and meditation in the morning, starting with 60 through 63. I take the third step. I do the daily reflection. I do the surrender novena. I do 84 through 88. And then I look for guidance from God in two-way prayer. And that brings me to the there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet. Those were the spiritual tools laid at my feet on day one, thank God, was the idea of a connection to God that wasn't me asking God for more stuff, but for me asking God, what could I do for you today? What's my guidance? What am I supposed to do today, right? You can hear step 11 all day in that. And the idea that if I'm seriously alcoholic, there is no middle of the road solution. Oh, I'm down to 1 minute. My God. If I'm hearing things in an AA meeting that have nothing to do with how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience, that I'm hearing middle of the road solutions, right? That's what drew me to Big Book Step Study. That's what drew me to AAA. And I'll just close, and I'm out of time. I could keep going all night, but you know, I got here because Father Bill W., if any of you have heard of him, he's a friend of mine, and I've been practicing prayer with him for a while now. And he suggested that I do this process here. So he led me here, where I met Jerry J., and I met Matt D. out of Pennsylvania. I don't know if you know those guys, but, you know, that's what just happened for me time and again. As the student was ready, the teacher showed up each time, and I've gotten to have this experience of finding a full dose. I'm the kind of guy that needs a full dose of this program for my recovery to work. And I don't want to go any further and bust the clock here, so I'll stop there.